A warning from the Fargo school superintendent. We're hurting already, and if this vote doesn't go through, our schools might be in big trouble. A warning to parents. 1 in 3 U.S. teens has diabetes or pre-diabetes. And maybe not a warning, but a keep your eye on it, comes for the Red River Valley about spring flooding. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here. Back in the chair in the studio in Fargo. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Yesterday, I got to do the show from Watford City. Saw a ton of people out there, a lot of friends, and love that community. Grew up in a hog and cattle farming kind of community and love getting out to places like that. And so I was out there yesterday, drove home last night after stopping off in Minot for a meeting, and now I'm back in here hanging out with Addison and you for the Steve Alstrom Show on this Friday. Good morning, Addison. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How about you today?
Excellent. Thank you. I had a very interesting experience today.
Did you?
Yes. And it's the day is fairly young, right? You're wondering, boy, Steve, how have you packed all this action into a short amount of time? Well, let me tell you. I went to Don's Car Wash on 13th in Fargo because I needed a little gas this morning. And I got out and I went to swipe my card. And all of a sudden there was a man standing over my left shoulder. And this man was not intending to be creepy, but it kind of freaked me out. I'm not used to getting out of the car, starting to get the gas pump going, and then having someone standing over my left shoulder. He wasn't trying to be a leering sort, but he was someone who was there as an employee. And I said, oh, hello. And he said, hi, do you need any help with that? I'm like, no, I do this about 3 times a week, and I think I know how to get her done, but thank you. And he said, well, we're just here if you need help. And he said, it's $1 if you would like us to pump the gas for you. And I grew up, now, Addison, you won't remember this because you're way too young, but I grew up in an era when you pulled up to the gas station, you could either pump the gas yourself or someone would come out and do it for you, self-service or full service at the local Amoco. And it's been 20 years since I was at a gas station where there was, although that's not true, when I was working at my last job at WEX and I was out in Pennsylvania, there's a law out there, I think, at least there was at that time, that they had to have somebody out there to help pump the gas for you.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, I think there are still states, like I think in like New Jersey, you can't pump your own gas still.
Yes, Jersey, Philly, or Jersey, Pennsylvania, yes, you're right about that. So, but other than that, I've never seen it in a place where it wasn't legally mandated. And so I said, well, thank you. And then I also, but I don't need you. But then I also heard an ad, the Integrity Convenience Store that's now advertising here on our station is now offering that they'll come and pump your gas too if it's cold outside. But this was for $1, you could have somebody pump your gas. And I was already midway through the process, so I decided to finish it out myself. But that was an interesting little adventure that I was not expecting this morning.
That would definitely throw me off. I guess if it's cold outside, that it depends how cold it is. I have seen people in town, like when it's really cold, you know, they'll put the nozzle in, they'll sit in like their cab. Yeah. And I've seen like gas just pouring out of people's cars because it's overfilled and they don't know about it.
Right.
I have experienced that, not gas overflowing out of my car, but someone pumping gas in my car. I did experience that once, right when I was first learning how to drive. There's actually a gas station in Dalton, just the other side of Fergus Falls, and they will pump your gas for you.
Okay.
And I pulled up there. It was one of the first times I was ever alone in my car and I needed gas. Terrified me.
Yeah.
I had no idea what was happening. Suddenly someone was doing the gas
for
me.
That's
I had no
old
idea
school.
What was going on.
Yeah. So something that I was not expecting this morning that I had a choice to make and I didn't know. The late great Roger Hallstrom would roll over in his grave were my father to know that I ever paid somebody $1 to pump the gas. That would be something the dad would say, son, get your bleep out of the well, he wouldn't say that. Get your butt out of the car and go pump your own dang gas and save the dollar. So
it's just such
it'd have to be really cold before I decided to pay the buck.
It's just such like a minimal task. I mean, you swipe your card or you go inside and prepay, you stick the thing in your car, you just stand there for like a minute or two and wait. There's not much to it.
But if we are honest though, Addison, there are times where you go, oh boy. When you pull up, you turn the, it's nice and comfy and warm and it's like 90 mile an hour winds and the temp's 10 below and it's 1,000 below wind chill. And you're like, I do not want to get out of this car. So we've all been there.
It happens.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I would still still do it. It's more work to tell the guy, hey, go and do it, than just go do it. So anyway, the day's off to an interesting start. A lot of ground to cover here on the show today, but let's get to it here with the Morning Wire. Semi-automatic storylines giving you a rapid-fire rundown of what's going on in the world today. Much to tell you about today. A couple of guests coming your way as well today. Justin Forty will be here. He is the state director for Americans for Prosperity North Dakota. A newer organization, but they're doing some great things. So we're going to visit with Justin about some of the common sense things they're trying to get done in the state legislature today. We will also visit today with Lisa Cruz, and Lisa is the commissioner of the North Dakota Department of Financial Institutions. Talk about an area of our state where there's a lot going on. Bridget Rita will also check in from the Commodity Classic here today as well. So let's get to it here with the almanac. I saw that the record high temp today in Fargo, by the way, 57 degrees set back in 1895. I like to point these things out for those that believe that the weather's killing us and that these hot temperatures are going to be the end of us, because it was 57 on this day in 1895. It just doesn't quite work for me. We will gain 3 minutes and 17 seconds of daylight today. Dow Jones Industrial Average is down big to start the trading day, down more than 600 points. S&P 500 is down 40, NASDAQ down 165. Some inflation numbers came in today that spooked the market just a little bit. We'll dive into that more here in just a few minutes. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas unchanged from yesterday at $2.98. North Dakota average price $2.61, Minnesota $2.79, South Dakota $2.70. In the news today, the Fargo Public Schools is proposing a $5 million cost cut with a mill levy vote looming. Dr. Corey Steiner reports the forum has detailed his plan for $5 million in cuts to address the budget deficit. Basically, they're going to let people leave and then not try to rehire positions, the old attrition thing, and trying to reduce some administrative costs as well. Steiner says we've got a big November mill levy vote pending. If that fails, there will be deeper and more painful cuts. Fargo Police Department hosted a community meeting for Beat 3 in Central Fargo last night with a face-to-face meeting about some of the crime stats and neighborhood safety initiatives there. They reported a 7% decrease for calls in service in that central district compared to the year before. The man charged in connection with the 2025 shooting death of a woman in Horace has officially pleaded not guilty to all counts, including murder. The defense for 21-year-old Derek Labo is expected to focus on a self-defense narrative, while prosecutors say there is forensic evidence here that shows this was a premeditated confrontation in the murder of 23-year-old Sakina Cotty. Major League Baseball legend and Timberwolves co-owner Alex Rodriguez has been announced as the keynote speaker for the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chambers Voices of Vision event scheduled for late May. He's now an entrepreneur involved in a number of different businesses, including owning the Timberwolves as well. Pretty good get for the Chamber to get A-Rod coming here. I'm trying to remember, and I don't want to say this because I don't want to besmirch his character unnecessarily, but I feel like he was one of those guys who was caught up in some allegations of steroid use, but I don't remember the details on that. The latest Red River Flood Outlook reports the forum has officially increased the risk of spring flooding from low to moderate due to significant late winter snowfall and high soil moisture. Must be a lot of snow maybe in the northern valley or the southern end, because we don't have much here. So I thought that was interesting. A group of families and advocates have filed an appeal to a recent court ruling that upheld North Dakota's ban on transgender medical treatments for minors. Drew Wrigley, the attorney general, continues to defend the law, arguing it's a common sense protection for kids, while the appellants claim it violates constitutional rights to health care. Cases expected to end up going to the state Supreme Court. Minneapolis-based Target announced it is going to stop selling any cereal containing synthetic colors like Red Dye 40 by the end of May. Make America Healthy Again is catching on pretty much everywhere. A massive federal multi-agency takeover has dismantled the family mob gang in Minneapolis. They've dismantled the mob. 11 arrests for large-scale fentanyl and meth distribution. Valley News Live reports that the gang was responsible for a significant portion of the lawlessness in the Twin Cities recently, using systemic violence to protect their drug turf. Wow, one of the high-ranking members of the family mob is still at large. How about that? When we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show, we are just getting started here for you, my friend. And we've got the story of the day. The story of the day, nearly one in three American teenagers has pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes. This is an alarm bell for sure. Okay, I dug into this during the commercial break, and what I remembered was true. Alex Rodriguez actually admitted that he took performance-enhancing drugs for 3 years back in the early 2000s. He's not in the Hall of Fame because of that. He's been on the ballot five times and hasn't made it. So, you know what? I'm not one of those people, though, that says, oh, why is he talking to people in Fargo? He's a criminal. Look, things happen. People make mistakes. They admit it. They move on. I'm good with it. I think it's going to be a great story of, you know, overcoming all that, right? Because you kind of have that scarlet letter then. So I think this is a guy who's probably dealt with a lot, overcame a lot, made some mistakes, but now doing some good things. So it should be a great visit when he comes to town. All right, story of the day. I saw this one and it jumped out at me. My brother is diabetic. He's type 1. Through the grace of God only, knock on wood, but as I'm sitting here today, I don't have that concern. But when I saw this story, I thought, oh my word, nearly one in three American teenagers. This is a study that was done by a department of the CDC, division of the CDC. So nearly one in three American teenagers has prediabetes or type 2, with the vast majority of cases being prediabetes, which is reversible if caught early. And this is why this is important here. And boys, by the way, far more likely to be affected than girls. About two-thirds of the kids in the study that were one of the quote-unquote cases were boys. So I did a little digging here. CDC data, a couple of the things, American Medical Association, and just some other news reports here for you. And here's the lay of the land, and I'm going to tell you some foods that you might be given to your teenager that you might think seem okay, but they're super high in sugar, which is sort of the problem here. So you're not born with prediabetes the same way you're born with type 1, which is considered an autoimmune disorder, but you can be born with a genetic predisposition that makes you more likely to acquire it. I guess it'd be the same thing like I've had my Achilles blown out, I've had other surgeries, kidney stones, whatever, and they give me the hard drugs and it's great. Like the opioids is not a problem for me. I can shovel them in by the bucketful and I'm not going to be addicted to them. It's just not a thing that I am predisposed to. Some people look at them and they're hooked. So I think it's probably the same kind of a thing here. Those of you who are doctors are rolling your eyes and all going, Hallstrom, try not to stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. The staggering statistic is that of this whole thing is that the prediabetes is almost entirely driven by acquired factors. So this is habits and environment rather than a birth defect. So prediabetes, I've been told, is acquired when the body's cells stop responding properly to insulin. And in teenagers, this is almost always triggered by excessive processed foods, synthetic dyes. Remember we talked about the Target story earlier? They're taking food dyes out of their products. High fructose corn syrup and ultra-processed grains. Also, sedentary screen time can be a contributing factor. Who would have thought? Lack of physical movement prevents muscles from burning off excess glucose. And puberty spikes. These are hormonal shifts during puberty that naturally decrease insulin sensitivity. But in a healthy body, it's temporary. It becomes prediabetes when combined with poor diet and weight gain. So what do we do? Well, RFK, Make America Healthy Again, the plate rule. Make your plate 50% non-starch vegetables, 25% lean protein, and 25% healthy carbs, like sweet potatoes and berries. Another good step, kill the liquid sugar. The energy drinks, the sodas, even fruit juices can be really high in sugar. Another part of the RX here, teens need at least 1 hour of moderate to vigorous physical activity daily. Wow, that's more than I thought would have been the prescription here. At least an hour of moderate or vigorous physical activity every day. It's not just about weight. The exercise basically reaches into your cells and forces them to become sensitive to the insulin again. And sleep. Sleep may be just the unsung hero of just about every story like this. If you get less as a teen, less than 8 hours of good sleep, it increases cortisol, which spikes blood sugar. So get the social media off your screen and turn off that phone an hour before bed. Parents, we did not do this with our kids growing up, and I just wasn't aware of the same way. But with what I have seen in the last few years, if I had a 13-year-old, I would be saying, new rule. 1 hour before bed, I'm going to find a way to do this. I think we tried with our kids because we saw it was a good idea. But now knowing what we know about all this stuff, there is nothing that can substitute for taking the phone away an hour before bed and just let the kids sit there in their thoughts as they're trying to fall asleep there. So, so I've got some sneaky snacks. I got the sneaky six for you today, Addison. The sneaky six snacks. All right. And as adults, you and I will use that term loosely. But as adults, we can look at this list too and say, okay, how many of these are we guilty of? Number one, yogurt. Yogurt does have probiotics, but the flavored versions, especially the fruit on the bottom, oh boy, that's the only kind I could stomach, can have 15 to 20 grams of sugar a serving. That's about 5 teaspoons there. So they say buy the plain Greek yogurt and add your own fresh berries or a little honey. Are you a yogurt guy?
Every now and then I go through phases of it.
Okay. Don't. Do it
well,
different, don't. Okay?
Okay, well, I'm already one out of one.
Okay, granola and protein bars. I'm raising my hand right away here.
2 out of 2.
Cookies in a wrapper is basically what we got going on here. They often use cane sugar, brown rice syrup, and fruit juice. They can have 12 to 15 grams of sugar. They say look for bars where nuts and seeds are the first ingredients and added sugar is under 5 grams. So I know I'm an offender on this one. You?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, it's getting real here, buddy, in a hurry. Fruit snacks and leathers, they are marketed as, quote, made with real fruit, but usually they're made from fruit juice concentrate. This strips away the fiber and leaves the sugar. A small pouch can contain 18 grams of sugar. So the remedy here is just eat real fruit. Are you a fruit snacks guy?
I love fruit snacks.
Same.
This is not going well for me.
100%
so far.
Right. I'm okay here. Instant oatmeal. A single packet of maple and brown sugar can have 12 to 14 grams of added sugar and turns a healthy breakfast into a dessert. So they say do the plain oats with cinnamon and a few walnuts for crunch. Are you an oatmeal guy?
No. So, you know, I was worried I was going to get all of these, but luckily oatmeal has spared me.
You and I are 3-1 so far. Or 1-3, probably how we should say it. Sports and wellness drinks. Okay, let's read here. Even if they aren't pop, a 20-ounce sports drink can have 30 grams of sugar, unless your team's doing high-intensity athletics for over 90 minutes. Sub it out with water with a squeeze of fresh lemon or lime. I'll kind of raise my hand on this. During marathon training, I do drink Gatorade and Powerade, but I'm killing myself when I'm doing that. So I feel like I maybe clear the bar there. How about you?
You're probably good on that. I don't drink Gatorade or Powerade super often, okay. So I think I'm okay on that probably.
All right, and last, and I'm guilty of this one too, condiments like ketchup and barbecue sauce. This is a stunner for me. But 1 tablespoon of ketchup has about 4 grams of sugar, and that's a teaspoon there. And barbecue sauce, yeah, I know that's heavy in sugar there. If we're dipping into the sauces there, those kind of sauces, we could be eating a candy bar's worth of sugar with our fries or our pulled pork sandwich. So, all right, so there's the deal. Some things you got to maybe try to steer clear of. You got to live once in a while, but maybe try to do your best on that. All right, when we come back, a new organization springing up doing great work in North Dakota. We're going to find out more about Americans for Prosperity coming up next. If you are feeling overwhelmed about trying to raise your kids in this crazy world, well, I've got an idea for you. We are bringing in a woman named Stacy Manning, and she's written a book. You may have heard of it, and it's catching on big with parents. And the book is Raising a Conservative Kid in a Woke City. And Stacy's going to be coming to town Saturday, March 28th, and we are teaming up with the folks over at Capstone Classical Academy to put this on. And tickets start at just $25. It is Saturday, March 28th. VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock, program at 7. Go to am1100theflag.com and get your tickets. It's going to be a great way for you to learn some perspective and some ideas for having age-appropriate conversations with your kids about some of these topics. So it should be a really good thing. Speaking of talking about the good stuff, pleased to welcome to the studio a good friend of mine, Justin Forty. And Justin is the State Director for Americans for Prosperity. And AFP has been around for a long time nationally, but honestly, I can say that I had not heard a whole lot about AFP working in North Dakota. But Justin and his team are changing that, and I'm so thankful. Justin, thanks for coming by. Good to see you again.
Great to see you too, Steve.
So AFP, is this the Koch brothers? Is this their organization that they started back a while ago, or am I thinking it was somebody different?
No, you're thinking of the right organization. Of course, they started this many, many years ago, but now this is really a North Dakota chapter run by North Dakotans, right? We have an extensive network of donors and grassroots activists across the state and other people that are really, looking at AFP as a way to get involved and really take that one first step of getting involved in the system. And that's, what we're encouraging is to people to just become involved and take that first
step. Love that. Absolutely. Yeah, we've been talking since Charlie Kirk was taken from us. We've been talking so much about that. And everybody's like, how do we remember Charlie? How do we carry on his legacy? Get involved. Go to the meetings. Find a way to make your voice heard. Just do the work. And so I'm so glad to hear you guys are doing this. We've been talking on my show about this, that your platform, your policy agenda for 2027 is all the right stuff there. Talking about eliminating state income taxes, expanding property tax relief, reining in government overreach, fighting for education savings accounts. These are home run issues, Justin. How did you land on these four?
This is just something that myself and worked with some of our folks around the state to really put this together is really a common sense agenda for North Dakota. As you said, these are issues, and we are a policy organization, right? We'll work with any group or any organization, any political folks that want to help us, to pass this really a policy-based agenda, less about, what's going on or the issue of the day on social media. But, this is all about people, right? Mm. This is about people, and we want to go out there and make people's lives better, right? Mm. Where they can have a free to go out and live their version of the American dream, right? And we got to get government barriers out of the way. We got to get tax issues out of the way so people can just go out and live their version of the American dream. And the first step is getting involved to help make this type of common sense agenda happen here in the state.
Now, AFP has been in North Dakota for a while, but it's been a little quiet maybe in the last few years. Now, you and your team jump in here, and we're hearing about you guys like crazy, and I love it. Tell me about how this whole plan to really expand North Dakota efforts got going.
Yeah, I'd been aware of AFP and the work that they'd done, and I'd worked a lot in politics for years here in the state and worked nationally, and I just seen the impact that they were making in other states, right, and was aware of some of their leadership. And this was really an opportunity for me to go. I like to build things, right, and build teams and build groups and build organizations and be involved. So I saw this as an opportunity to really step in there and build this chapter to what it could be and really to build something here that was going to leave a legacy for our state and help our state long after, I'm out of this chair and doing this, right? This is an important, I think, with, things that we've seen going on, a policy-focused organization that everybody can get behind in these times and in their state of North Dakota can just be very helpful to the entire process.
Yeah.
Every day I'm involved in conversations about, a way that AFP can play a role, whether that be helping out people with elections, getting the right people elected, bringing good policy to the state that we can pass. Just every day there's opportunity for a group such as ourselves to fill that void, and it's just fun to be exciting to make that happen. And we're looking for people, right? We're hiring. Going to hire a ton of people across the state.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of offices.
So, okay.
Looking for volunteers, people that want to get involved, people that want to contact their legislators. We're looking for people that want to run for office. I mean, everything. We have a lot of resources to be able to help and looking to make a huge difference here in the state, and it's going to be fun.
This story seems to have some parallels to me of what's happening across the country where people are trying to, say, how do we take that next step? How do we get involved? And some organizations that have been out there have now come to North Dakota. Center for the American Experiment has done the same kind of a thing. They are now in North Dakota with a chapter, and they're doing some things here. Do you work with other groups like that, or do you guys kind of do your own thing and, hey, we'll cheer you guys on from afar? How does that work?
No, I mean, a lot of the groups work together, right? There's a national group called the SPN or State Policy Network where, a lot of the different groups, the Tax Freedom Foundation, Pacific Legal, American Experiment, there's groups from all over the country. Some of them are national type groups and have a lot of the chapters. Some of them are very, you know, regional type groups that, that don't have as much. But yeah, there's some great events that I think you'd really like, you know, going to meet and get connected with some of these groups all across the country. Many of them have staff, but yeah, there's a great working relationship between, you know, like-minded groups. And you know, from an AFP North Dakota perspective, right, we'll work with anybody who wants to work with us, right, and who has this kind of policy background in mind and wants to go past that. We've partnered already with, you know, many of these groups. We've worked, had a great relationship with the American Experiment on School Choice, right? So we work very closely with them on that. You know, so really it kind of depends upon the issue and what, you know, folks have on the agenda and that they're passionate about. But yeah, we've worked with them and a variety of other groups who are doing a great job in the state who are, you know, on the same page about how to move us forward.
AFP, you were telling me before the segment started that AFP was really involved in putting momentum as much as possible behind One Big Beautiful Bill. I did not know that. So AFP has been involved, looks like, on some of those fairly significant national issues.
Absolutely. We, you know, as an organization and me and a bunch of folks who had great, you know, relationships in D.C. spent a ton of time there working on this issue. We just felt that that was, you know, really the biggest thing, issue that needed to take place to, you know, for the good of our country. Right?
Agree.
And we just made that our number one priority to keep more money in people's pockets, right? I mean, that's, you know, thousands of dollars now for every North Dakotan that they have more in their pockets because of getting that done. And, you know, just spent a lot of time working on that, a lot of time working with all of our members of Congress to make sure we got that thing across the finish line.
That's fantastic. When you talk about the opportunities for people to get involved at AFP to either volunteer or hire or whatever, what kinds of people are you looking for? Who would be a good person to get involved here?
I mean, I really think everybody, right? I mean, we just want to, you know, connect with all of our folks across North Dakotans and have them take the step that they want to get involved, right? Whether there's people that are passionate about, you know, national elections and want to, you know, come into the office and you know, make calls to maybe a state that's got a, you know, busy, you know, Senate campaign, or obviously, you know, we're going to be much more involved in our legislative races across the state, right? So if you're passionate about helping out a particular candidate that you know that we're aligned with, and you want to go help, you know, knock doors for one of those candidates in right here in Fargo-Moorhead, you know, there's opportunities, right? If you want to be, you know, just be more educated about the process, right? If you want to get involved in the school choice issue and help, you know, take a busload of kids from maybe some of your other friends, and you know, we're glad to help, you know, bus every kid from Fargo-Moorhead that wants to go out to Bismarck and talk about school choice, right?
Yeah.
We will help make that happen, right?
We'll, you know, find a way.
So, you know, all of those things are like everybody choosing what's the best way for them to get involved, right?
Yeah.
If you're a mom who wants a better place for their kid to go to school and you're having problems with that, right, reach out. Let us help you talk to your legislators. Let us help you, you know, get out to Bismarck. All those little things that are going to work to help you make a difference for your family and your child.
Do you have a twin brother that can go over to Minnesota and do the same thing? Because good Lord knows we need help over there, man.
Well, actually, I'll throw a plug out for my friend Jake Coleman, who you probably have heard that last name over there in Minnesota.
He's married,
his wife Julie is a state senator.
Oh, sure.
Dad is
Norm.
Dad is Norm, right? So he is the state director for Minnesota.
And, okay.
You know, last weekend, actually, we had a bunch of North Dakotans go across the river and start knocking doors and making phone calls for legislative districts in Minnesota.
Oh, hooray.
Attempt to start to flip some of those seats in Minnesota to get some Republican control over the House and get that thing under control there.
Oh.
So, you know, again, if you're in North Dakota and that's the way you want to be involved, right, because maybe you grew up in Minnesota or lived in that side of the river, again, just another way to like, okay, I've got four more days here this spring where I can start going out, talking to my friends and neighbors, or maybe you want to, you know, go visit with people that you grew up with and make a difference, right? So take that one small step and find a way to make a difference. And if you're, you know, from Minnesota or a North Dakotan who cares about what's going on over there, you know, but again, a great opportunity to get involved.
You talked about education savings accounts. This is an issue, Justin, that I have wrestled with in my own mind. I was a public school kid. My kids were public school kids. We had great experiences. Now, it's been a few years, certainly for me and for my kids, too. But tell me about education savings accounts and how do we make sure that we still have good public schools left if we are giving people options to go to private schools with funding at the state level? How do we allow both things to happen at the same time?
Well, yeah, I'm a product of Tallna, you know, Tallna Public School. Very proud of being from Tallna, North Dakota, and I don't think anyone's out there trying to, you know, hurt our current public schools and people that are there that are having a great, you know, a great experience. But you know, this is about kids, right? This is about kids and what's best for them, right? government, school boards, school districts, they do not know what's best for them. And Steve, it's really about, it's just about people. The stories that you hear, you know, every day from people that are having problems with the system, right? It is just so sad. And of course, you know, the COVID thing was a big part of kind of starting that, you know, that national momentum. But, you know, every day you read an article in the paper about a kid that and a parent that are, you know, struggling, right? Maybe they were bullied and they need to go, you know, they just need to get out of there and go somewhere else, right? You know, as far as the solutions, I mean, it's easy, right? It is their taxpayer dollars, right? We have to give every kid in the state the opportunity to make the best choice and the best decision for them. It isn't about tax dollars. It isn't about all the fluff that you hear, you know, from the other side of the argument. Those are false arguments. They're just not there, right? We need to do what's best for our kids. We need to do what's best for our parents. They need to make those decisions. People in school districts are not, you know, best to make those decisions for kids, right? I mean, that needs to end, right?
Yeah.
This is an old, antiquated system. It's just not there. And yes, of course, it's complicated. But when you talk about what's best for people and what's best for our children, you know, this issue should be settled. And North Dakota is like, you know, 47th. I mean, we're like dead last in
right.
this thing, right? I mean, it's like, you know, come on, we've got to get with the times here and get this passed. And for the wide variety, everybody is supportive of that. You can't really argue with, you know, well, I got to make the best decision for my child. You're a parent. You would make that decision every single time, and you need to be empowered.
100% right.
Empowered to make that decision.
I feel like in North Dakota, our schools are full of good people. I really do believe that. But man, I see what's happening in Minnesota, and it is systemic. What's happening within the schools, the way they are ideologically forming our kids at such a high level. So, with you on that, can you hang out for a few more minutes? I got a couple more questions I want to ask you.
Always happy to be here,
Scott. All right, my man. We're going to get into eliminating the state income tax and expanding property tax relief. These are two big ones. I want to talk with Justin about that. We'll do that when we come back on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. Continuing our chat with Justin Forde, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Justin, you're speaking my love language here when you're talking about expanding property tax relief, eliminating the state income tax. I was one of the wackos that was behind Measure 4. I lost on that one, but I don't think I really did because I think I was pushing for the right thing. I don't know what the right level is on tax relief. I don't. You buy a big house, you expect to pay a big property tax bill. I understand all of that. But I want somebody else to get uncomfortable figuring out how to pay for this stuff rather than the taxpayers. And in Fargo, it's worse than anywhere else in this whole state. So you all are pushing for expanding property tax relief. Tell me more about this.
Yeah, Steve, I mean, people just need to keep more of their hard-earned money and make their choices about what they're spending on it. That's the best way to, you know, ever everybody go out there and, like I said, live their version of the American dream and create their own prosperity is for them to decide, you know, where they're spending their money, you know, not the government or the particular, you know, government entity. So tax relief is just a huge part of our platform, right? You know, the income tax makes perfect sense in North Dakota to eliminate that, both from a competitive standpoint. Many of our other states, South Dakota, Wyoming, do not have, you know, income tax. You know, should be very easy to do in our state. This isn't a huge, you know, fiscal note.
Yeah, it's not a big number to handle.
No, so why would you not do that? And why would you not allow people and encourage them to work and keep more of their hard-earned money?
Well, no doubt. It's such a great marketing tactic, too. We're trying to recruit people to come to North Dakota to live, work, and play. If we've got something we can put on a bumper sticker that says, hey, no state income tax, why would you not want,
I mean, North Dakota is a great opportunity. We're not at the top of, you know, states for the best tax environment, right? Why would you not want to be number one, right? I want, mm-hmm. let's go ahead. Let's eliminate that.
We're better than most, but let's get really good at it.
Yeah, why not? Why wouldn't mm-hmm. you want to get better? And that is an easy way that I think every single, you know, person across the state should be able to get behind that, right? I mean, let's eliminate that income tax. Let's just take that out of the equation and let's go ahead and do that. And from a property tax standpoint, we got to make sure that, you know, your property taxes go down every year, not up, right? We've got to work to make sure that you're, you know, imagine the economic situation we would have, Steve, if you knew that your taxes were going to go down every year, not up. I mean, that just changes the trajectory of our state to have that happen where you're not worried about, hey, you know, oh my gosh, I don't want to come, you know, open my mail or, you know, tax time and I'm, mm-hmm. you know, fearful for this, right? It's a change. Let's unleash some more economic freedom and let's work to get those property taxes down, you know, more and more every year across our state.
Can you guys work on anything? I've been seeing some of the stories coming out of Horace with some of the special assessments over there. we can talk all we want about property tax relief. It's a great subject, but it really comes down to local spending. And as long as we continue to spend the way that we are and the mechanisms that we do these special assessments, I can't even understand it, and I've tried to look into it. My gosh, some of these people are getting, you know, $20,000, $25,000 bills just slapped on their desk saying, sorry, you got to pay it. We can talk all we want about the government's role, should the state pay more, whatever, whatever, but we've got to find a way to do local spending at a much better level.
Yeah, I mean, that starts with, again, people getting involved and trying to take that first step and make that change at the local level, right? And people have to think a little bit differently about how they're going about these things at some point, right? Trying to, realize that, some of these things were created by the way we developed in the streets and the systems and, mm-hmm. Housing is certainly an issue, right? Affordable housing, you hear all of that, right? All these systems are created, and everything works to kind of make those systems go, and that's kind of a problem with the difference in philosophy about government, right? It just tends to grow on itself, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we've got to have regulations that make sure our government gets smaller every year, not bigger. We've got to make sure we pass things like the RAINS Act in North Dakota. These regulations that are
I'm glad you mentioned that. I want to have you talk about this a little bit, this RAINS Act you're talking about.
I mean, the RAINS Act was something that was, they really tried to pass federally maybe 10 to, 15 years ago. But basically, it all goes back to the agencies not being able to make, rules or insert regulations that insert costs, on people, right? And really making sure that
which is like all of them, right?
I mean, like all of them, right? They all have a cost, right? So you make a rule and all of a sudden there's a cost to it. And a lot of them, you may have heard of, nationally or... there's a Supreme Court case here not too long ago, right, about, the trying to require, fishermen out in the East Coast to, employ somebody to be on the boat with them, or, our farmers that are, they are requiring them to, do a bunch of stuff, environmentally on their farm, or, somebody sees a duck and they call it a wetland. I mean, these are huge financial regulations that, get put on people. Right. And you've got to have those things enshrined in law to stop them and to make sure that they can never happen again. And it really gives a lot more power to make sure that any of these regulations that an agency comes up with mm-hmm. that have a fiscal responsibility have to go to the legislature and get passed by that body, and really making sure that they do their job. Right. That's something we need to, we're decent in North Dakota, but again, let's get better.
The president has, I think, set a really good example on this, and he talked about in his State of the Union address the other night that they have like $200 billion in actual savings from the deregulation. So we just need more of that, and like you say, we can be better at it here at home too.
Absolutely. You should not have to worry that a regulator is ever going to show up at your house or your place of business, right?
Yeah.
That should not be something that a North Dakotan should have to live in fear. I heard a story the other day, a senior citizen center on a Saturday, they were grilling outside at one of their small town days, which we all love across North Dakota. A regulator showed up to regulate their grilling outside.
Regulators mount up. They've been doing it too much. Justin, thanks for stopping by. Great to visit with you. Keep up the great work, and I'm sure we'll be talking in the days ahead.
Thanks so much, my friend. Great to be here with you.
Justin, thank you. Justin Forty, State Director, Americans for Prosperity. Coming back, the key three on the Steve Alstrom Show. Hour two coming up next. Hour number two of the program brought to you in part today by Dakota Implant and Sedation Center, and they're doing something really cool. Over the years, I think we've all become very aware how important our military and our veterans are. Well, Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center gives a hearty hear to that whole idea. Every single veteran has a story, and that really means something to Dr. Matt. So he's trying to find a way to say thank you. And he's got a big heart over there and loves the veterans, loves our military. So he's giving one deserving veteran a brand new smile, not as charity, but as gratitude. If you know a veteran who deserves this, nominate them on our website, am1100theflag.com, and let us know about that special veteran in your life, and they could be the winner of that great prize. Thank you to Dr. Matt for honoring our veterans over there at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo. It is time for the key three here on the Steve Alstrom Show, and these are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are stories that have a little bit of impact, more than just a typical headline. So story number, I've actually got two stories that are maybe make you go, oh boy, what are you doing here? But I think every once in a while we can learn something from polling. Now, you got to be careful with it. I get that. Some polls are out there to make you try to feel a certain way or think a certain way, but sometimes the conclusions make you believe pretty quickly that, okay, I don't think the fix is in here to take away from the truth. So this comes from Frank Luntz, and he is a noted pollster who has done a lot of surveys, elections, and trends and storylines within the country. And he put out a poll with one question. Agree or disagree, the United States is the greatest country in the history of mankind. Now, what do you think the answer would be from those on the left on this one? Who would say agree? Who would say disagree here on this one? All right. 73% of Democrats said, I agree. 75% of independents, I agree. And 96% of Republicans said, I agree. Disagree? Only 4% of Republicans disagreed. How in the world do you look at that? Like, who's better? Who's better? 4% of Republicans disagreed with that, 25% of independents, 27% of Democrats. Okay, so since we know that, what do we do with that with all of these other polls out there that talk about, you know, presence on the wrong track? I mean, I get it. It's not the same question. But if you think U.S. is the greatest country in the history of mankind, why do we have polling out there about, you know, capitalism and socialism and your transgender or whatever? Because these are not things that have led us to be where we are at right now. I just thought that was a stunner. 81% of Americans altogether agree that the United States is the greatest country in the history of mankind. Why that's not 99, there's always 1%, right? But why the number's not higher, I don't know. But I'm surprised, if I'm honest about it. 81%, including 73% of Democrats. Huh, how about that? A second story that has something to do with a poll here today is a story I saw that came from the Gallup people there. And the Gallup people are doing surveys about the, I lost my story right here. Where was it? Where did it go to? Okay, I'm going to find that later. We'll throw that in somewhere else because my screen froze up a minute ago and I completely lost my my place. So I'll throw this in here that CNBC with the summary today of this story. But Minneapolis-based Target Stores has announced it's going to stop selling any cereal containing certified synthetic colors like Red Dye 40 and yellow number 5. And this is going to happen by the end of May. The retailer, listen to this now, cited customer research showing a massive shift toward clean labels and healthier lifestyles. Where does that come from, do you think? If you said DJT, RFK, MAHA, ding, ding, ding on this. 85%, Target says, of their cereal sales already come from dye-free products. The FDA is continuing to review the impact of petroleum-based and other artificial dyes on childhood development and behavior. This, to me, is very interesting. This is not a typical Target story. But Target has, I think, seen some of the error of its ways, and they have done certain things to change some of the transgender confusion clothing options in the store. They made it known that they would serve customers if they were ICE or Border Patrol. They got targeted because of that. And now this, President Trump is changing the way our country eats, exercises, and generally exists holistically. And I don't think he's getting nearly enough credit for this. But this is a story that's not immediately going to make you say, thank you, President Trump. But Target says it has consumer and customer research. Those attitudes are changing because people are talking about this. I have to be honest with you. There's a lot of things I've eaten, a lot of things I've done, and I just haven't thought a whole lot about it. We did the whole thing about the pre-diabetes earlier, and Addison and I flunked the test on what we're eating and how we're throwing stuff down the hatch because we just haven't thought about it. Now that you think about it, you might make a different choice. Well, President Trump is causing us to think differently about this. He is causing research from Target stores to show a massive shift toward clean labels and healthier lifestyles. And because of that, Target is going to stop selling things with the food dyes in them. This is a good thing. The president deserves some credit about this. And finally, I throw this story in here not as a definitive answer to the question, but a data point for us to consider. Because we live in this all-or-nothing society where anything that happens is either something that indicates that Donald Trump is the worst or the best or whatever. A lot of times, most of the time, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Nobody's perfect. Nobody does everything wrong. But here's an interesting one. The producer price index number came in for January today, hotter than expected. And again, expectations, I don't care too much. I want to say, what's the trend? Where have we been? What does the data show? I don't care what some economists expected. Those guys are wrong more than we are on just us common sensors that think through this stuff. But the data came in showing a 0.5%. So this is what manufacturers, wholesalers, what they're paying to get the goods coming from the factory. I guess it's more wholesalers than it is manufacturers. So those people, the people that buy the product from the farmer, the factory, they say 0.5%, which is annualized, a 6% number, where their costs are going up. In theory, this should pass along to the customer. And we've seen some pretty good trends at the customer level, the CPI number. This one goes in the other direction. Now, could this just be a weird one-off? Yes. I don't think inflation is really 6%. Could it be ticking up to the low to mid threes, maybe four? Yeah, possibly. Inflation is generally not runaway right now, but it's still an issue. And especially so since we're on the heels of 20% price increases under the Biden administration. So the producer price index comes in a little hotter. Inflation, is it a problem? I don't think so. But is it sticky? Yes, it absolutely is. And some of these things are still working through the supply chain. Now, one of the biggest causes of this was electricity prices, up about 6.5% year over year. President Trump is going to get blamed for anything where he's not lopping big chunks off of prices right now. But look at what's happening. Look at all the XL Energies of the world over the last 10, 15 years that have fallen to the woke climate stuff and have said, we got to completely change how we do this. We got to get away from coal. We got to have a bunch of expenses now to fire up solar and wind and everything else. Well, now we're paying the price for that, for these ridiculous theories that are unprovable. And now we take a look at where we're at on the prices that go into energy, and it's more expensive. We need to get back to firing up our coal plants. We need to invest in the things that work already, petroleum, coal, oil, natural gas, all of those things. But we are now paying the piper for all of these crazy ideas that we've had. And that, I think, is the biggest reason that we're seeing some of this bump in the PPI today. A best thing I heard all day, coming up next. It is time, my friend, for a little ditty that we call Best Thing I Heard All Day. I want to start with a little bit of a summary because I've been asked by a couple of people, hey, Steve, can you give me just kind of the fifth grade explanation of what this SAVE Act is all about? And I've sort of glossed over it because it's not all that complicated. I think the general points of it we're all aware of. But there are a couple of things that kind of lurk in the details that might be helpful. So I want to talk about this, and then Best Thing I Heard All Day talks about that. So the SAVE Act is actually called the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. That's what it stands for. It is probably the biggest flashpoint we have in politics right now, which is saying something, right? This focuses on how we make sure that our federal elections are secure to make sure that only U.S. citizens are participating because, after all, that's the rule. Okay, so we are hoping to do with this, and I say we, I think I speak for you as well, But we're trying to amend the National Voter Registration Act of 1993 with some new mandates. Number one, documenting the proof of citizenship. This is probably the biggest source of consternation from the left. It basically requires anybody who is going to vote in a federal election to provide physical proof of citizenship. It also implements a photo ID requirement to cast a ballot. It also mandates that states regularly cross-reference their voter rolls with federal databases to identify non-citizens and remove them. It establishes criminal and civil penalties for any election workers who break these rules, and the bill allows private citizens to sue election officials if they believe the proof of citizenship requirements are not being properly enforced. Okay, so those are the main things that it does. And a couple of those you probably haven't heard a whole lot about, because I haven't either. So the bill is in a bit of a standstill right now, and this is a little bit of a food fight among the congressmen and women and the senators, because the House has gotten this through, 218 to 213. And Mike Johnson, I'm telling you, this guy's resume is getting better and better all the time. But the bill is stalled in the Senate. Now, the Senate has some different rules here, and that's why it's a little stickier. It needs 60 votes over there to move to a final vote. Republicans have 50 votes on this, but they and with J.D. Vance, they would have 51. But there is there's not 60 there right now. So how do you do this? It's going to be really hard. And a lot of people are frustrated with John Thune, the Senate leader, because they are not getting the votes, but they don't have the votes. So now what do you do? Well, now you're talking about blowing up the filibuster, which I'm going to be honest enough with you, my friend. I am not a political expert. I don't know all the details of the filibuster, but it basically allows you to change the rules on how you get things through there. Now, there is some big internal GOP pressure here, and I honestly don't know exactly how I feel about that. How's that for a definitive stance? I don't know how I feel about this, because on one hand, we have these laws and these rules that have worked for us for hundreds of years, and if you just start blowing up the rule book and finding other ways to do things, to me, that feels like we're just waiting for the time when Republicans do not have control, for the left to ram through anything they want with only 50 votes. And that makes me very nervous. On the other hand, I think we've reached that point in our legislative society, our congressional society, if you will, when they're going to do it probably anyway. Things have just escalated to that point, so why not do it now? Mitch McConnell has been a big opponent of this. And he said, we cannot start blowing up our federal procedures to get this taken care of. So here's me. I lean towards saying, let's do it. Let's do whatever is needed. But I'm not there 100%. But I do feel like some of these things, like how do you really argue against this, especially with an 80% approval rule, which this is? The American people want this. And if congressional Democrat senators do not see that, then I feel like you'd say, okay, logically, you've got something that we can do here to make this happen. As you might expect, it's become a political football to be kicked around, where on Fox News Channel, the Will Cain Show had a 20-something guy named Brett and a 30-something-year-old Republican like Asia debating this all day long. And it is the best thing that I heard all day.
We all agree on that point. I just think that the reality is that an act like the SAVE Act is very likely more aimed at voter suppression and at keeping key demographics that the Republican Party does not want voting to not show out and vote.
Okay, so this is 20-year-old Brett. He's a Democrat voter, and he said you're going to suppress voters. People who should be able to vote, who are legal voters, you're going to discourage them and in some cases deny them from voting. But 30-year-old Asia wants to say something about this.
I think very often minority demographics.
That's not true.
No.
So this is the thing where the suggestion is it's going to keep the black vote down. I've got two black panelists here. Ajwa?
That's not true.
Do you have ID and proof of citizenship?
Yeah, and if I need a copy of my birth certificate, it's just a matter of going online or going up to the department and asking for it and showing my information to get it. To say that it would negatively affect a minority group because they're somehow not educated enough to get these documents is completely outrageous.
Annie?
In my opinion, this should not be a controversial issue.
Mm-hmm. So, two black voters say this is not a problem. And I've talked with you a lot about this, the subtle racism that we have of low expectations. Now, I would not even try to attempt to understand what goes through the mind of someone who is on the far left who wants to try to argue with you that my people, I'm putting words in their mouth, but my people can't do this. This is too hard. They're not resourceful enough. They're not capable enough, the smart enough, whatever it might be. I don't know how they look themselves in the mirror on this one. Without, at the end of the sentence, saying, you know, all I really want to do is make it possible for us to get away with a few things. So I thought that was a really good discussion, and I thought that was the best thing I heard all day. When you got two female black voters, both fairly young for whatever that matters, countering the soy boy, Brett, who's like, I think it will cause, you know, all this stuff that you hear, and you've got two black women going, excuse me? What, you're saying I'm too dumb? I can't figure out how to get this done? That is racism. It is. They want to say that Donald Trump is a racist, Republicans are. We're the ones who think that black people are equal to white people in this. Like, there's a lot of dumb white people out there, okay? There's plenty of smart black people that can get the job done when it comes to getting this done. And these ladies are basically pounding the table saying this is that quote-unquote reverse racism of low expectations, and I thought it was really great. So this is the debate. The American people have spoken on this. It'll be interesting to see if Congress can get this done. All right, when we come back on the program, we're going to talk about the North Dakota Department of Financial Institutions. You may not hear about them in the news every day, but what they do every day is really important. That's next on the Steve Alstrom Show. If you're looking for a sales job, maybe you like that sales world, but the place you're at, it's just not giving you that kind of a product that you really can get behind. Boy, do I have a product for you. It's Vision Ford Lincoln down in Wahpeton. Not just the products they have, the cars, trucks, SUVs, new and pre-owned, but the service they have as well. You get to talk to people about how great Vision Ford Lincoln is, and when people do need that car, truck, or SUV, then you've got this whole great parking lot full of vehicles to match up with. And all you're really doing is helping people you know find the vehicle that they've been looking for when they need that. So if you're in the sales world and you're looking for a new adventure, go to drivewithvision.com. Drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, home of the 50 minutes or less to buy a car, truck, or SUV. 1033 Steve Hallstrom Show. Bridget Riedel is our ag director here at Fieldstone Group, Flag Family Media. And she joins us now on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, live from San Antonio, the Commodity Classic. Hey, Bridget, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you to AgCo and Fendt. They are our partners for advanced ag machinery and smart farming solutions. They made sure that I can deliver messages back to everybody for Commodity Classic as to what's been happening here in San Antonio for the last 3 days. And one great announcement here for North Dakota. North Dakota soybean producer Rob Rose of Wimbledon is now going to be serving on the United Soybean Board. He was appointed by the USDA. It'll be a three-year term, began in February, actually. And he spent his time previously on the North Dakota Soybean Council. With the council, he worked with Clean Fuels Alliance America, wanted to show farmers how important it is to have a voice and how their checkoff dollars are invested. And he'll now represent North Dakota on the overall board. This is made up of farmer leaders from across the United States. This board is about 84 people, and Rob Rose will be one of the three representing the state of North Dakota.
Wonderful. Bridget, what does that mean to our farmers? Obviously, having somebody on that panel is a good thing, but how can that help North Dakota soybean growers, do you think?
because Rob gets the opportunity to talk with legislators, policymakers, trade groups, and to be able to talk about the quality and consistency of North Dakota soybeans. When you think about the fact that as a state, we have four of the top 10 producing soybean counties in the United States. We have huge counties. We produce a lot of soybean acres. Where do our beans go? How are we outmanning and outgunning other people in other countries? That's where Rob can help. He can also help to highlight research ideas. That's how soy foam came about, so that we can replace forever chemical firefighting foams with a soy-based one to help reduce not only contamination in the environment, but to firefighters with the potential increase for cancer rates. We can look at using soy in so many different ways. And here we have a farmer who raises them saying, buy my product. I want to see how you can make it work better. There's a lot of great inventive ideas that we're doing with soy these days.
I bet there's a lot of subtle influences that you can have there, and just directing conversation and bringing stories from back home to the highest levels. That's always a good thing. So very cool. I know you were sorry, Bridget, did you want to add to that?
Nope. I agree with you entirely.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about your panels. I know you were moderating a couple of panels yesterday. How did they go?
Excellent. I had the opportunity to work with Valent yesterday. Valent Company is unveiling a new mode of action, or excuse me, new herbicide in the Group 14 mode of action. Okay, so Group 14 means that these are more of a selective way of controlling weeds. And it works by translocating the product through the xylem and the phylum within the plant. So we're all thinking back to our 8th grade biology.
Oh boy, xylems and phylums. Yeah.
And what's great about this product is it's good for burn down, so that we can use it to kill the weeds that are in the field before we even plant or after we've taken the crop off. For us, in our region, in the Dakotas, Minnesota, where kochia, as well as water hemp are problems, this is a great fit. And it's helpful for us to terminate our cover crop, because we can plant a cover crop after we harvest our crop,
okay,
holds the soil in place, holds the moisture, but then we need to terminate that before we plant our next year's crop, so it's not competing with our corn, our soybeans, etc. So this is going to be a product that will help us in that realm. And we want to tank mix it with other modes of action, so we're not just singling out one application use.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. What's on the agenda for today?
Well, you know what? I want to give a reminder to folks, because we often forget about the fact that we've set up all these legal documents for our farms. Maybe there was a trust that was established. Maybe you called our friend Mark Wagner at ND Estate Services. And then, as a farmer, you may buy and sell some property and forget to have it titled into the trust or the property that was purchased decades before.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, we are in a situation where we've forgotten something and things aren't going very smoothly in the event of a death or a transition. Have you checked your beneficiaries of your life insurance or retirement accounts? Because I can tell you, your current spouse isn't going to be real happy if the ex winds up getting the beneficiary money. So a reminder to go review those legal documents within your farm family. If you have not talked to someone about establishing a trust, what fits, what doesn't, why it's good for your operation. These are questions we should be asking to plan for the future, because today is important and it provides us with plenty of stress and planning, but the future with the unknown, we'd better get a grip on it as quickly as we can.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. Mark Wagner over at ND Estate Services is a master at this, so appreciate you mentioning him as well. Well, Bridget, I know you're busy. We'll let you get back to your day. Thank you so much for being here and for all the great work that you've done for us this week down at Commodity Classic. Safe travels getting home, sister. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks so much, Steve. You have a great day. And
Take care.
Fence, drive the boldest tractor yet. Leaders drive fence.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks so much, Bridget. You take care. All right, 38 past the hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am pleased to be joined in studio today by Lisa Cruz. And Lisa is the commissioner of the North Dakota Department of Financial Institutions. So they are responsible for regulating, examining North Dakota state charter banks, the credit unions, trust companies. They do chartering as well. They also license and regulate money brokers, loan originators, loan servicers, and all those kinds of things there. So this is a really important element of our financial, our economy within the state. And we don't always talk about it, but Lisa's been good enough to stop by to answer a few questions and give us a little bit of a look inside that. Lisa, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what are some of the ways that your department will typically be interfacing with people around North Dakota? What are some of the common ways we might see your team out and about?
Well, you'll see us when we go to the banks. We regularly visit our banks and credit unions to make sure that they operate in a safe and sound manner. And it's just if we notice that they're taking on too much risk, we will address that kind of behind the scenes so we can – the goal is the same for all of us. We want those banks to be safe and sound and healthy so they can serve their consumers. And consumers can have confidence in the financial services that they get.
What happens if we don't have – good work being done by your organization, what happens then?
Well, there would be increase in fraud. There would be no accountability. And
We don't need any more of that these days, right?
Exactly. That's what I feel like we're seeing a lot of and fighting a lot. But our banks and credit unions in North Dakota are really steady. And I think if we were not there, there wouldn't be that confidence for the citizen to go in and be, you know, get their loans and it would be a free-for-all. And we've seen the countries in the world that don't have a stable banking system.
Well, or the states, like California. Remember we had that weird kind of crypto bank thing going on? And there's a difference between those kind of banks and the banks that we have here. That community banking scene is so important. Talk about that.
Yes, that's actually a passion of mine. Because I grew up in Norway, and I moved to North Dakota, and I've traveled all across the state and seeing the impact that a community bank has. Banking sometimes get a bad reputation because they think, oh, the big bad bank. Mm-hmm. Well, community banks are not the Wall Street banks. Mm. Community banks are Main Street. Mm. They're relationship-based. They work with customers. So if you look at statistics, two-thirds of agricultural loans are made by the community banks and over half of small business loans because they care about the community. They know their community and they base it on relationships. And I think that's one of the reasons I believe United States have the best economy in the world is that dual banking system where banks have a choice. Yeah. You know, they can be federal or they can be state. And they have the ability then to serve their communities with a lot more independence and not so much so like regulatory government interference.
What are some of the ways that a regular old guy like me or maybe a young farmer, what are some of the ways that we benefit from what your organization does? Like how do we know that we've got a good path ahead of us because of what your organization does?
Because we're always there. We've been there since before statehood. Mm. And we are kind of the behind the scenes, what is causing the stability and keeping the accountability there. And also, you know, even a lot of our non-banks where we've seen a lot of growth, we on our website, you can see, are they licensed to do business in North Dakota? Mm. Are they chartered? And when something goes wrong, they can call us and we have ability to act on things that, you know, if there's stuff that are unlawful, we try to act on fraud and we work closely with the Attorney General's office if anything is happening. And so we're there enforcing the rules.
Do you regulate banks so you can't charge so much on interest on a loan? Like maybe the insurance commission takes a look at insurance and you gotta have to approve rates. Do you get into that, any of that kind of regulation of rates at all?
Not on rates. For banking, that is their decision.
Okay. Are there processes or protocols where you get involved and say, okay, bank, if you want to underwrite a loan, you got to be looking at these things, or if you want to sell a loan on the secondary market, you have to do it this way? Do you get involved with any of those kind of things?
A lot of our work is actually looking at loans because that is the biggest risk for a bank. And we want to make sure that they do things properly, get the right information, and that the bank does whatever they can do to protect themselves from risk. Their whole business model is to be in risk. But what they're using, the funding are depositor money, which is why it's very important that those loans are administered and handled appropriately, both for the borrower, but also to make sure that the bank doesn't take on too much risk so they're not failing.
Do we have good banks in North Dakota generally? If you compare us to other states, do we have a good selection? Are they compliant? Are we considered like the, you know, staying between the lines? Are we the renegades in the landscape? What things look like here with our banks compared to what other states have?
Well, I think they're excellent. We haven't had a bank failure since 1989. I think our banks are conservative. They serve their communities well.
Yeah.
And they just and I work a lot with them, and we have a good relationship, and I think they do a good job. they focus on their communities.
Can you stick around for a couple of minutes? I got a couple more questions for you before we finish up today. Lisa Cruz, she is the commissioner of the North Dakota Division of Financial Institutions. So we're going to continue that conversation. I want to ask her a little bit about cybersecurity and some fraud trends that we might want to be aware of. We'll do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. If you have a question for our guest today, Lisa Cruz. Lisa's the commissioner of the North Dakota Department of Financial Institutions. Lisa, you were telling me during our commercial break that you actually report all the way up to Scott Bessent at the federal level. And because of kind of how things work with your department interfacing with the federal government, that gives you some resources and ways to do things that are pretty unique. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's not quite right that I report to him, but okay. I serve on a committee that he chairs.
I see. Gotcha.
So, and that's the Financial Stability Oversight Council. And I represent all the state bank regulators on that board or committee in Washington right now with other federal regulators. And my role there is I speak up quite a bit because I think it's important that Washington understands that North Dakota and the rural districts exist, and things are not the same in New York and Washington as they are here. And Bessent is very interested in hearing what the state regulators see across the nation.
Yeah.
I've appreciated that.
Yeah, I've been super impressed with Scott and what he's done at that federal level, and he seems to have been a wonderful choice by the president. I want to ask you about Bitcoin ATMs, talking about like fraud and watching what's happening. It seems like there's this kind of brave new world of cryptocurrency, and we don't always know what to make of it. And with regulation, I'm guessing things like that are some things that you kind of are aware of, too. Tell us what we need to know about some of these kind of things and other fraud issues we should be aware of right now.
Okay. So last legislative session, we were given the authority, and we already had the authority, but it was more specific for the Bitcoin ATMs and the crypto ATMs that you see everywhere. They have to be licensed in North Dakota. So make sure you check our website that you're working with one that we have oversight over. What I want to say is that we're seeing a lot of fraud. So what I would recommend, you know, anytime you get a phone call and somebody says you have to put money in something, verify that with some people. Call our department. There's no way IRS is going to call you to put money into an ATM or your bank is not in trouble. But we are seeing millions and millions of dollars getting lost. And we have elderly sometimes are targeted, but we've also seen young victims. And they get into these scams and the frauds. And as soon as you put that money into the ATM, it's difficult to trace because they go from one wallet to the other and then they end up overseas.
Yeah.
So I know there's a Grand Forks police officer that has been very in a lot of conversations with us. I think it's a bit of a headache for all of us. We just need to make sure that that those ATM providers, that they follow the rules and do their part to safeguard citizens.
Absolutely. I grew up in a small farm community that had a rural bank, and community banks are so important. Are we doing okay with our rural banks and our community banks? Do we have enough banking options? Do we have any banking deserts? Now, this is a term that we use for things, but how are we doing with our community banks? Are we long and strong with our community banking?
Yes, we are. And North Dakota actually has more community banks and branches per capita than any other state in the nation. And also with online banking, we're finding that college students, they still keep their account at their local community bank when they move, if they have to move away for school. So in North Dakota, our banks, I mean, they're there. And they've been there a long time. And I think that they do good like wise choices and wise decisions on risk. And I think they're there to serve their farmers. And they're, you know, the banker, you sit next to them at the football game on Friday night.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that's one thing when I look at some of these other companies, like some of our non-banks are coming in. I mean, they're big, flashy, and they provide great services. But when you go to your school or your local sports arena, that's not the name you see there in North Dakota. It's your local bank.
Yeah.
And that's where they give a lot back to the communities that sometimes is unseen and unrecognized, especially by regulators.
Yeah.
But I like to highlight that because I think they do a lot for our communities that that I just wish they would get more recognition for.
Yeah. I love your accent. You may have started your days somewhere other than North Dakota.
Yes. I grew up in Norway and I came here for college.
Wonderful. And went to Concordia?
Yes.
And you've worked through the system and now have gained your position. Congratulations. What a great story.
Thank you.
And we're thankful that people like you are watching these things so that we can have trust in the banks that we go to each day and the credit unions and financial institutions that we have. So thank you very much for being here. Thanks for letting us know about you and your organization. If someone has questions or would like to ask more about the role that you play with their community banks, how do people access your organization?
They can go to our website with DFI at NDA.gov. Like, we're a part of the governor's cabinet. We're part of your government, state of North Dakota agency. So you can find us there, and there's an ability there to contact us, or they can email us or call us, and we're pretty accessible.
Okay.
And we love to hear from people.
All right. Go Cobbers. Their men's basketball team had a great year. The women, I think, are still playing, and they're having a great season. So good to meet you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Lisa Cruz, and she is somebody to get to know for sure. We're very thankful for her time here today, the commissioner of the North Dakota Department of Financial Institutions. All right, well, that will do it for the program today, my friend. Great to have you with on the ride here this week. And next week, I think I'm going to be out and about a little bit, but still going to be able to do the show from a couple of places I plan on going next week. So wherever we're at, we're always thankful that we can bring the Drive with Vision studio with us. I hope you have a great weekend. Hope it's relaxing. Hope you are able to connect with the people that mean something to you, and look forward to being back here again with you next week on Monday morning here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Addison, thank you, my man. Appreciate you and all the good work again today.
Right back at you.
All right, buddy. Have a good day, my friend. Keep on flying that flag. We'll see you on Monday.